Hey everybody, my name is Jesse Collings, and I want to tell you all about my show, the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast, here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. On the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast, we do a thorough analysis on the biggest issues and trends within the pro wrestling industry. We talk a lot about pro wrestling media, we talk a lot about fan culture and wrestling's place within general pop culture, and we talk about the broader influences that are shaping the way we discuss and analyze the pro wrestling industry. We've had some of the brightest minds in the pro wrestling intelligentsia on the show, including WrestleNomics host Brandon Thurston, both Rich Kreich and Joe Lanza from the Flagship Wrestling Podcast, Trevor Dame from the Through the Years podcast, and a whole lot more. This isn't a show for hot takes. It's not a show recapping the latest episode of television. This is a show focusing on the biggest topics in pro wrestling and doing a deep dive on the real stories behind the surface level analysis you might find elsewhere. The Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts, and we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a try. Thanks.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Competition's starting to get thick, it's the click, so I hope you brought your A-game. A-man, no lanes on the track when we unite and spit. This isn't A-game, better bring your A-game. Competition starting to get thick, it's the click, so I hope you brought your A-game. A-man, no lanes on the track.
Hey now, it's the Mike and JD Show, and I'm your host, Mike Gilbert, and I'm joined as always by JD, by God Oliva. How you doing, JD?
Oh, once I got my computer updated, I was fine. You know, school started, we had like a thing at school night, we had to be there till like 9 o'clock, so I was rushing to get home, and then I had to get the kid to bed, and then we had to, you know, I promised him I'd play chess with him every night, so trying to be a good dad, and then I get the computer turned down, and it's like, oh, it needs to be, OS needs to be updated, I'm like, God damn it, so like, trying to get a lot of stuff done.
You know, I hate whenever I come to my computer and I'm like in a hurry and then I go to turn it on and it's like, oh no, we have to process an update. This can take like 15 to 20 minutes. So annoying.
It only took five, but it was like eight, but it was like, man, I have to get this done now. It was just irritating. Yeah. So sorry, everybody. My fault.
No, it's all good. The chat is already lit. We got a lot of people checking us out tonight. We do have a very special guest who's going to be joining us towards the end of the show. His name is Jamie Scott Greer, and he wrote a book called, hold on just a second, I have it written down. It's a long title. Oh God, my thing didn't work. Hold on. It is called, I just tweeted it out. Sorry, folks. It is called, Killers, Butchers, Crybabies, and Canadian Destroyers, The History of Wrestling in Windsor. So
I love that title.
That's a cool title, man. But it's like just too many words for me to remember the whole thing. So, but I've typed it down a few times, and so I'm like, okay, I'm gonna get this title. But yeah, it's let me say that one again. And it's actually available now on Amazon. You can get it at Amazon Prime. I actually have a book coming to me soon. It should be in my mail. I was hoping to get my copy today. I actually checked the mail right before I went on the air because I at least wanted to show the physical copy. But it's Killers, Butchers, Crybabies, and Canadian Destroyers, The History of Wrestling in Windsor. So we're going to talk to him about his upcoming book and probably fire away some questions about the new upcoming Maple Leaf Pro Wrestling promotion that I know JD and I are pretty excited about because I think they got some cool announcements that they just made. But man, it's been I just share a quick personal story. So I think probably the worst thing about being an introverted dad is that like when you're walking your kid to school and she has like a little friend, she's like, hey daddy, can you get her daddy's phone number? And I'm like, just like, so fucking like, like awkward. I'm like, sure, honey. And then I'm like, hey, my daughter wants me to get your phone number. And it's like the most awkward thing in history that ever happened to you.
So, I do not have any of my son's friends' dad's phone numbers. Okay. I can top it. So like my my son's workout partner for wrestling, like again, I don't live in the town that I coach in, that our son is in the club, and I live about 20-25 minutes away. So his buddy wanted to get together for outside workouts, and he's like, his friend's like, can you ask my mom for her number so that we can get together? And I'm like, and she's a single mom, and I'm like, oh
God. Yeah,
I had to, because I had to drive the kid around. So she's like, oh, here's my number. And I'm like, oh God. So I had to like tell Michelle, I'm like, all right, like, look.
Yeah.
She was cool with it. But yeah, the getting the mom number is actually worse than the dad number.
Yeah. So my daughter did that to me one time when we were at the playground. And we have like this big park right behind my house, right? My kid can literally, like, we can sit in Hawaii, we call it the lanai. So it's just like a back porch, but we have a lanai. And so my daughter can literally just run out and then run across this grass field. And then there's like a basketball court and a bunch of playgrounds, right? In like this big circle. And she will just run over there. So, but I will go over there with her, because sometimes there can be bigger kids. I just like want to make sure I don't have to like crush some children, you know, picking on my kid. So, you know, I was just standing over there, and she made friends with this one little girl, and she goes, Daddy, can you get her mom's phone number? And her mom was like right there. And I was like, no, but I can give her your mom's phone number. And now, so I did that move. Like, here's my wife's phone number. And then they're like friends now. So
I have to ask, Mike, was the mom hot?
No, nothing like that. No,
I'm just trying to bury it.
Either way, I was just like, I'm not doing that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not getting caught up like that.
No, my wife doesn't have anything to do with the wrestling stuff. So she, like, again, I just like, I had to get Zion's mom's phone. Oh shoot, I said the kid's name. I had to get the kid's mom's phone number, and she's like, that's fine. It's whatever. But she has it too, so we're all good. But yeah, that's it's a weird thing, man. Like when your friend has to be friends with your kid's friend's parent, like when you have to be friends with your kid's friend's parents, it's odd. Michelle's much better at it than I am.
Well, and the older I've gotten, the more like introverted, and I'll be honest, like the more crusty I have gotten.
Oh, yeah.
Like I'm just kind of like, people want to do stuff with me. I'm just like, you want me to do what? You want me to come over to your house and eat your food? Like, for how long? How long do I have to be? Like, everything's just like a burden to me. It's so bad. But I have to, like, you know, suit up and show up and, you know, and go do those things, because I got a family and they don't want to just sit around the house all day like I do.
Mm-hmm. My Andy's best friend, his family invites us over for watermelon every summer. And I've actually kind of grown to look forward to it, because he does a pretty good job growing these watermelons. So, I mean, this is actually kind of tasty. Like, it's fun. I don't mind them. So it's like, okay, you know, I guess this is fine. Like I said, Michelle does all the scout stuff, so she's friends with all the scout parents. Cause when I do the scout stuff, I just sit here like this.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just the dad life in your 40s, man.
Oh yeah. It sucks. It sucks. Yeah.
So weird. But all right, guys, let's get to our top story. And I think this, you know, something we've been expecting for a while. But Rico, Mr. Samantha Irvin himself, has signed a multi-year deal with All Elite Wrestling. So the former WWE star, according to a report by Fightful, he is expected to make his debut at All In on Sunday at Wembley Stadium. Let's see. Ricochet spent 6 years in WWE, but was written off television following an attack by Bron Breakker since his departure. Been a ton of speculation about his next move, which I think we all kind of figured he was going to AEW. The 35-year-old superstar has remained silent about his plans, but insiders have long suggested AEW would be his likely destination. So, he not only has signed, it looks like he is going to be headed to London, England this Sunday for All In.
It's a trade, him and Penta, right? That seems okay. Like, I'm okay with that. Right.
Then,
I mean, like,
and of course, eventually Phoenix,
but someone else will jump too at some point. Like, again, this is, we said this with Penta jumped. Like, this is healthy for pro wrestling in general, just to have some movement. Like, I think Ricochet hasn't been interesting in WWE probably since his NXT run. So, I mean, like, the fact that he's going to come here, I think that he's probably going to be a better fit in this roster. Right. So, it's a good thing. I think debuting him at All In this weekend is going to be a cool thing. Good for him.
Yeah. I think it'll be cool. And I think that he's not going to ever be their world champion.
No, that's okay.
But I want people to be like, okay, they need to set a reasonable expectation. This is probably, as far as positioning goes, probably going to be a lateral move, but here's the kicker. he's going to get to do more of his shit. He's going to get to be Ricochet in AEW. He might get some bigger opponents, but he ain't going to get any victories over Ospreay and Okada or anybody like that. But he'll get to be the Ricochet that we all know and love here in AEW.
I bet it's more than a lateral move for him. I bet he's much higher up the card in AEW than he would be in WWE. Because I think all the top guys are going to want to work with him. How many are going to want to put him over is a different story. Yeah. But I mean, like, at least I think he's at least in the conversation for stuff. And quite frankly, February 2022, how many of us really thought Swerve Strickland was going to be a world champion there?
I feel like you and I were pretty early on him. Maybe not in February 2022, but I felt like, because we liked him during his MLW and Lucha Underground days. I thought that, you know, you and I specifically, I'm just going to give us credit, fuck everybody else, but
yeah, no.
I thought you and I thought that, maybe not the world champion, but I thought that he would be a star there.
Yeah, so did I. I remember having this conversation on the old show, and we said, yeah, he would be big, but I mean, like, I don't think we were on an island, but it was pretty comfortable. You know, it was like a resort. There weren't a lot of people there, I think here's the thing is, like, you move into these places, some good things can happen.
Yeah.
Right. I don't want to sit there and say, well, he's not going to do this. It's because he kind of curtain jerked a lot of his WWE run.
He did.
So at least he has a shot to at least become a player here. And then it's on him. AEW is kind of sink or swim with, like, what you do, you know? Yeah. Like, they push you if you can find a way to get over, you know? So I think, I think this could be a good thing for him. Like I said, he's going to have to get out of his comfort zone. Like, I'd like to see him be Prince Puma, quite frankly.
I thought Prince Puma was awesome.
And
I love Ricochet, specifically his New Japan stuff that he did. And of course, oh, yeah. I've never been a PWG guy. It was just never been my thing. But I did see some of his PWG stuff. I was like, oh, this guy's pretty fucking cool. And I liked his NXT run. I was still watching NXT when he was there.
Yeah, me too.
And but of course, he never quite made it on the main roster. But that happens to a lot of people that are kind of his type, kind of a smaller guy. And he's not a great promo. Never has been. That's always going to be a weakness of his. I am worried about seeing him in, and I think somebody tweeted out like a meme or a picture or something like that of him and like facing off with Jericho over the FTW title. like I do worry about stuff like that. It's like, can we just, you know, let him do the cool shit, you know, let him wrestle Pac and Ospreay and Okada, I want to see Omega, you know, I think that would be cool when Omega's healthy. Like, let him do the cool stuff, but keep him away from all the dumb stuff.
I want to see Omega. That's what I want to do. I just really want to see Kenny Omega again.
Yeah. That brings me to another story that kind of broke earlier this week. Well, it didn't really break, but Dave Meltzer said that Omega's still not doing great, but he's hopefully going to be getting better and he should be returning. And then when he does return, Kota Ibushi said that he will be ready by the time Omega returns, and then that's when he's going to show back up.
Kenny Omega gave everything he physically had to the sport of professional wrestling, and specifically his AEW title run. Like, that man was the champion when AEW had its most viewers and like its most selling the most tickets. Like, I want to say he's probably the most successful champion they've had as far as like a weekly, you know, basis, as far as town to town and stuff like that.
I'd like to see a study on that, because I think you're probably right about that. I think some people might maybe point to, like, they would try to point to Punk, but he just never held the belt for that long. He got hurt both times.
Yeah, Punk did not have a title run, so to say. So Punk definitely their biggest draw, but I mean, as far as the champ, right? Like, if you want to give credit to the champ, it's got to be Omega, right? Mm-hmm. So that being said, I mean, like, that guy gave everything. Like, he's probably he's 41 at this point, and there's a lot of miles on that car, man. And I just miss the guy. I do.
Yeah, for a long period of time, I would say probably 2017, I think up until Will Ospreay's like most recent rise, he was like my favorite, like, bell to bell pro wrestler. That, like, anytime he was on the card and you knew he was going to be there, he was always going to be probably the best guy on the show.
Kenny Omega was one of the inspirations for me to write Gaijin, because I started coming up with the story during Kenny Omega's rise. So, like, in my head, like, I was always thinking about Kenny Omega when I was putting that thing together. So he's a guy that holds a lot of weight with me as far as being a talent goes. Very transcendental, I think is the term I'm looking for. It's late. My brain is fried. Talent, you know, I'm a big Kenny Omega fan. I think the promotion is just better when he's around, quite frankly.
I think he makes everybody step up their game because he is one of the guys in AEW that can do both things. He can cut it. I think he's a good promo.
I think he's a good promo.
Always, especially when he was a heel. I thought he was a really good heel promo. I think that he ups everybody's game, like not only in the ring, but I think just his overall presence on the show, I think he makes everybody work a little bit harder because, you know, the measuring stick is there no matter where he goes.
What I love about Kenny Omega's promos is that they're so different, right? Like so many guys have the WWE style of delivery.
Bitch. Down. Yeah.
Bitch. Yeah. Say,
exactly. Now, which has like been every Britt Baker and Mercedes Moné promo is like they have to end it with that. So
you know, Peppermint's a genius. That's what I like about Kenny is he's just different. Like it's a little odd, it's a little quirky, but that's kind of what pro wrestling should be. Like he's unabashedly Kenny Omega, and I respect that about him. Heel, face, like. He's just him all the time. And there's something to be said about that. And I don't know, like guys like him and John Moxley, we're just getting them all the time. Eddie Kingston, another one. Like there's not enough guys like that who aren't trying to be something, who just are.
Yeah. I think he's always been unapologetically himself. And I think like his heel character and his babyface character are just kind of slight variations of who he really is. I think that when he was a heel, he was just kind of a dick. But he could probably be that person in real life, but you just kind of crank up the volume.
I always loved the New Japan heel character, like the original cleaner, because it was like a nerd's idea of what a cool guy should be, right? And that was definitely Kenny overcompensating, right? And you felt that in the character work, which I think that Kenny brings a lot of himself to his work in that regard. Yeah, because the AEW character, the AEW heel was just a dick. Right. Yeah. But he was like a veteran dick who'd been around, who was a little bit jaded and who knew he was the shit. Right. Yeah. But didn't play it off like anybody else in that role. Like he very much played it like the way a dork would be a dick, you know?
Yeah, no. Yeah, he absolutely did. And I think that in a couple of years, as he gets a little bit older and we get further removed from his TNA run, I think a lot of people are going to go back and look back on that and with a little bit more reverence than maybe they did, because maybe it didn't end the way that everybody wanted it to end. And Scott D'Amore was on Chris Van Vliet. I don't know how to pronounce his last name. Greta Van Vliet, but Chris Van Vliet.
Greta Van Fleet's a lot more entertaining, but yeah, continue.
Yeah, yeah. I think they're a great band, by
the way. Me too. I also like 1974 Led Zeppelin.
I think that if you're going to be a cheap knockoff Led Zeppelin band, I think that they just run with it.
They do.
They're really good.
I like when Robert Plant goes, oh, that guy's trying to sound like me. It's very clear they're trying to be Led, but they're actually really good at trying to be Led Zeppelin. And I would rather have someone pretending to be Led Zeppelin than 99% of what's going on in rock music right now. So I'm down with Greta Van Fleet.
Yeah. It's kind of like Our Lady Peace was like, they were more than okay with just sounding a lot like Smashing Pumpkins. You know, there was kind of like a more up-tempo version sometimes, but hey, anyway, man,
Creed wanted to be Pearl Jam.
They did. All right, back to the point at hand. So he had an interview, like two-hour interview with Chris Van Vliet, and I had it on at work today. I got to listen to just about all of it. I didn't retain everything he said, so I'm gonna have to go back and hear some of the transcriptions. But he looked back on that time fondly because there are some people out there. I don't think I've ever heard this before, but he said that he had people telling him that they thought that Kenny Omega had dogged it during his run. And I'm like,
what?
Yeah. Yeah. And then Kenny Omega specifically was apologetic to Moose for the match that he had with Moose, 'cause he was really banged up going into that match. And he felt like he didn't help Moose deliver. And I was like, I remember that match and I thought it was really good. I just felt like the fans were exhausted because it was at 1 a.m. when they were recording it in Jacksonville. But I thought his run and impact was a lot of fun.
The only disappointing thing was him and Rich Swann, and that wasn't Kenny Omega's fault. Kenny Omega blew Rich Swann up, and Rich Swann could not keep pace with him.
Yeah, well, I think there's a lot more going on with Rich Swann, and we'll probably talk.
I think
we'll talk.
Right.
Yeah, we'll talk about that here in a little bit. I don't want to get too much into that right now. But you know, of course, Chris Van Vliet tried to get him to to talk about the differences between NXT, the NXT partnership with TNA and the AEW partnership with TNA. And he was very political, but I thought he actually gave some pretty good insight. And I'm going to get into the NXT TNA stuff this weekend on Brace for Impact. So a little bit of a teaser there. But one thing that he did say was that Kenny Omega was absolutely on board with dropping the title to Josh Alexander, but AEW wasn't having it. So the compromise was to drop the title to Christian. And he was like, that ended up being a great compromise because Christian rules. And he was an all-time great, which is he basically validated every episode we did during that summer of Omega, during the partnership era between AEW and TNA. Like, he validated everything that we said, that it was like business wise the most successful they had been, you know, ratings wise, you know, except for after a few weeks, people kind of just realized like, hey, we can just watch Omega on AEW. But there for a little bit, they did really, really great. They did two great pay-per-view buys, and it was an awesome run.
The quality of the show when Kenny was on, especially at first, was not good. Like, they were people, a lot of AEW fans tuned. This is back when AEW fans cared about wrestling. Like, they came and they tuned in to watch Kenny Omega, and you treated them to Wrestle House.
Yeah.
So I don't know what you were expecting. But no, I agree. Like, is this, by the way, is this the chat, the interview that you said there was no way I listened to, by the way, in the chat? I saw that.
I said there's 0% chance JD heard that interview today.
That is correct. There's not a chance that I didn't know it even happened until you said that.
Yeah. They were like, I can't wait to hear you guys talk about it. I was like, JD didn't hear that.
No, I haven't listened to Chris Van.
Yeah.
I might, though, because for Scott, I do want to listen to what Scott DeMore has to say. So this is actually something I probably will go back and listen to.
It was the most insight we've ever gotten into him in forever. Because for all his faults, Chris Van Vliet does give people a good platform to tell their story.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think he's actually really, for the wrestling podcasters, I think he might be the best interviewer. I really do think that he tends to get a lot out of people. I like hearing Scott defending his run. There's a lot of stuff that's out of his control. A lot of Kenny's run was COVID.
Yeah.
Right. And like, there wasn't a lot that could be done. And it was Kenny to TNA was one of the more interesting things that's why we have a show.
Yeah. That's the whole reason why you and I got together is because like, you know, it was like, hey, you know what? AEW is bringing Kenny Omega. Let's just say Omega is bringing interest to Impact. Maybe we could do an Impact show. And we did.
We did.
And it was great. And it's still on patreon.com/TheMikeAndJDShow every Saturday morning.
You can catch it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's I'm interested. I think that Scott kind of gets a bad rap, especially for the end of the run. And again, I didn't love everything that was done in that promotion. I think he booked way too much of it around himself at the end. But I enjoyed TNA a lot more when he was there.
Yeah,
you know, in general, I do like Scott DeMore, and I'm super, super curious to see what's happening with Maple Leaf.
Yeah, and our guest, Jamie Scott Greer, will actually ask him about that, because it's Maple Leaf looks like it's going to be a territory located in Windsor, and so that kind of coincides with the book that he's got going on. So, we'll talk about that. You know, it was interesting. So one of the things he said that he regretted was that he was like, he didn't say he regretted Kenny Omega being there, because Kenny Omega brought eyeballs and business, and that's ultimately what it was about. But he said having Kenny Omega on the show and being the world champion kind of like limited what they were able to do, because there were just certain things they couldn't do with him. Yeah. He didn't say what he really wanted to say is we couldn't beat the guy, like, because he was also AEW's world champion. And that's kind of why it probably went south. He didn't say this, by the way. This is just me kind of like, you know, remembering how everything went, because that relationship ended basically when Christian Cage dropped the title to Josh Alexander. But I think a lot of it was like they put their title on Kenny Omega. They were probably thinking Kenny Omega was going to drop it to Josh Alexander. And then that just was never on the table. And then they couldn't do it. And but they made a nice pivot, like I said, with Christian Cage returning. I thought that was cool.
Popped the number for the first Rampage, right?
Yeah.
And it actually gave a little bit more, and it actually gave a little bit more stakes to the top selling pay-per-view of in AEW history.
Yeah.
Right. It was all in 2021, right? And having a champion versus champion match, two world champions against each other, gave it a little bit more juice. Like, Impact was definitely the lesser partner, similar to how they are with WWE now. Like, just how it is.
I would say, if you're just saying with WWE, if they were doing main roster stuff, yeah, but because it's NXT, I would say they're on more equal footing now, even though NXT has better ratings and stuff like that. Yeah. But I would say the talent pool in TNA is better than in NXT. They just have more seasoned talent.
Oh, yeah, I agree. I agree with that.
Bigger name talent. So that's why I've always said that I like this. I like both partnerships for what they bring, because they're very different than from each other. And that was the point that he was trying to make. It's an apples and oranges comparison. Mm-hmm. And NXT is about, you know, bringing up their young talent and things like that. And TNA is kind of like this hybrid territory Memphis type of thing, where they got these, you know, stars that have been on TV for a long time that can help out young talent. And so you can kind of, you know, interchange them. I think the big difference between the two is that TNA talent has been able to shine on WWE television when they weren't able to with the AEW partnership. Really what they got out of it was just Omega on their TV. And that was also awesome, right? A lot of things can be good at the same time. We don't have to like build one up to tear the other one down. No. We can just say what was good about both of them.
No. Again, I always tend to look at WWE with a little bit of an eyebrow crooked, because it's just the history, right? The history of the company. Like, they're very interested in Joe Hendry. Joe Hendry's more of a main eventer in NXT currently than he is in TNA. So
that's about to change, sir.
We'll see.
They're booking him like Super Cena, according to what I saw tonight. So,
okay. That's cool. They should, quite frankly. He's the most over guy in the company. It has been.
Yeah, and Bound for Glory looks like it's going to be a 2,500 seat arena, and he's probably going to be the top billing against who? I don't know. I have a guess, but looks like he's going to be on top, though.
I do wonder how long Joe Hendry is for TNA.
That's going to be the big question, right? How that always ends up. But yeah, I will get more into the Scott D'Amore stuff, because he did say a lot of stuff about the way his run ended in TNA, kind of validated what me and BQ were saying here. But he gave his side of things, and so I'll go ahead and I'll get into that stuff on Saturday morning. So if you guys want to join me live and be a part of the chat, and if you want to hear the stuff exclusively early, ad free, all that stuff, both audio and video, go to patreon.com/TheMikeAndJDShow. Now, let's go ahead and get into the chat. We have not done this yet. So let's see. Sean Tragedy says, happy that Canada has re-entered the wrestling world again. I think it's kind of cool that Maple Leaf Pro is going to be a well-funded like territory in Canada. And hopefully they're going to be kind of like trying to, you know, carve out something like CMLL, AAA, New Japan, NOAH, as opposed to being like a touring worldwide show, just be like a unapologetically Canadian broadcast. I think that's cool. And that's kind of what Scott D'Amore was talking about today on the program.
And there's nothing wrong with that. I think too often people, and this isn't anything new, this goes back 30 some years, is people think that in order to have a successful, bigger promotion, you have to be like, you have to have those national, you know, expectations. And I don't think there's anything wrong with being a territory. It seems like Scott is interested in going back to working with AEW and New Japan and CMLL. So, I mean, like, I think that'd be cool. I think that'd be cool. I'd be good to have something, like I said, uniquely Canadian, isn't the way CMLL and AAA are uniquely Mexican.
Yeah, absolutely. North says, talking about Ricochet, keep that man away from a microphone and let him flip on TV. Yeah, just let him be him. I mean, he can still do some storylines, but I don't really need to see him do like a 10-minute promo and do a contract signings and all that shit. I was like, we don't need it.
You got to do something with the guy, but I don't need him to hear him monologuing. That's not him.
Yeah. Let's see. And the people disagree that it was a lateral move. Yeah, it was probably wrong terminology by me. I'm never, ever wrong, but that might be one of those times that I was slightly incorrect. But time will tell, sir. Time will tell. Everything Pro Wrestling says I was a huge Swerve Strickland fan when he signed too. Hey, it looks like we weren't the only ones then. So that's good.
It wasn't an island. It was like a resort compound.
You know? Yeah.
There were some people having fun, but it wasn't packed, you know?
I oftentimes like will look back on something and think that the whole thing was my idea. And that came to light recently. You remember that movie Sideways?
Sideways. The one with Paul Giamatti?
Paul Giamatti and the Ned from Wings. Thomas Hayden Church. I said something on Twitter because somebody like had a gif of that movie, and I just quote to him as like, hey, nobody watched that movie but me, but it was an awesome movie. And then I was just flooded with a bunch of people that not only did they watch it, but it turns out that did like $100 million at the box office. awesome.
Yeah, it was a pretty big movie. That's why Thomas Hayden Church, I believe, was Oscar nominated. He may have won, I don't recall. That landed him Spider-Man. Like he played Sandman and Spider-Man because of that. So it's a pretty big movie.
Yeah, but I do that all the time. I'll look back on something like, yeah, I think I was the only one that liked that. And like turns out it's like, no, actually way more people than just you liked it, Mike.
Well, it's so weird when things like that come out, because like something like Sideways, it doesn't feel like a lot of people liked it. But I mean, have you ever met a single human being that says Avatar is his favorite movie?
I don't think so. No, not unless right. They're like just like Cuckoo Over Gone or Dances with Wolves is the same movie.
It is the same movie as Dance of Wolves. Yeah. I like the exact same movie, but it's like, that's like the number, I believe that's still like the number one money-making movie of all time. And yet I've never heard a single person go, God damn, I could just watch Avatar 12 times a day. Or like, you know, it's a big moment when I showed my son Avatar for the first time. You know, you don't ever hear stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. You legit never hear that. Mm. Okay. Let's see. Kenny Omega having some of the best matches I've ever seen in my life, with no shoulder, broken heel, and vertigo. Will forever have him in my all-time list.
For real.
Yeah, absolutely. Dream Ultra Crazy. AEW had a better relationship with TNA than WWE. Numbers don't lie. Plus, WWE never sends their top talent down there.
It says
a lot about both companies. I think it's a different relationship, but I think TNA likes the fact that their talent's getting shine on WWE television and just bringing that back, which was something that they didn't get out of the AEW thing. But they also like the Omega thing. Right. Mm-hmm. So like they're just different. But I think that if you would have sent TNA talent to the AEW show, they would have gotten shit on, because AEW just fans don't like TNA.
No,
they don't.
And at the time, too, AEW had one television show. WWE has five, something like that. Yeah. So, I mean, like there wasn't a lot of real estate for AEW to be showcasing a lot of TNA talent. It would have been nice if we could have gotten Rich Swann on some Dynamites. I still maintain that would have been nice. But it's just different. And like with NXT, it's the lower brand, like it's the developmental brand. So I mean, like it works. Like both relationships make sense for what they are.
Yeah. King of the North says, being so close to Toronto too, if AEW gets a little bidding war going for TV in Canada, Maple Leaf could get some TV up here too. I think you know, Damore mentioned Crave. It's like a streaming service up in Canada. I think that he's probably looking at something like that. He kept bringing up streaming, so I think that might be the avenue he's looking for. But he wants it just to be a Canadian. He wants to be just Canadian, strictly.
I don't know enough about Canadian TV to comment on this. It's a different world completely up there, so.
Yeah. I got a message, Jamie. Ooh. To let him know, hey, we're ready for him.
Oh, yeah. Did he forget?
It is midnight where he's at.
Fair. So I'll waste time while Mike's talking about this. I'm actually, because like if you actually look at the history of the original Maple Leaf Wrestling, the promotion run by the Tunnies from like the probably the 40s to the 80s, it was super interesting to the end, because like they always had, like Maple Leaf always had a really good relationship with the Vince Senior WWF, and they always ran there, and then that ended. And then they ran with Crockett. Like when Crockett started expanding, Crockett's guys were going into Toronto all the time. And then Jim Jr. got paranoid that that the Tunnies were going to work with WWF. So he basically kind of forced them into it. Like he kind of totally misplayed a situation there. And like, oh, I want to say 83, and wound up pushing the Tunnies toward working with Vince anyway. So maybe it was a self-fulfilling prophecy. Maybe it would have happened anyway, but the history, the end of Maple Leaf Wrestling as the original Maple Leaf Wrestling as a promotion is actually super interesting. It was actually one of the first territories that what would become WCW and WWF fought over in Toronto.
Hey King, I'm gonna answer this question, but I want to ask this question to Jamie if and when he comes in. Mike, do you think Josh Alexander works Maple Leaf only once his TNA deal is up? No, I think Maple Leaf is just gonna bring people in from around the circuits. I think he's working the upcoming shows. I think he'll probably continue to work all the shows, but I don't think he's going to be strictly Maple Leaf. I think even if he doesn't sign with somebody else, I think that he will, unless he goes to WWE, I think that you'll probably see him, you know, working Maple Leaf.
I don't see that happening.
I don't see Josh going to WWE. I just don't think that he's like their type of guy. No. So, yeah. All right. We have Jamie Greer in the green room, but hold on. John Muse always keeps me in check. He just texted me a photo of the book. So I was like, oh yeah, you're a genius, John. That's why we love you. All right. So there's the book right there. It is Killers, Butchers, Crybabies, and Canadian Destroyers, the History of Pro Wrestling in Windsor. Mr. Jamie Greer. How you doing, Jamie?
Very good. How are you?
I'm doing good, man. We're really excited to have you on. JD and I are big fans of pro wrestling history. As soon as you featured our buddy John Muse in the book, I was like,
yeah.
I texted John. I was like, well, do you think the author would want to come promote it? And he's like, I bet he would.
Sure.
Yeah, welcome to the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network, and welcome to the Mike and JD Show. Well, we're excited to have you, man.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure. I think it's the first podcast I've done since it got published. I did a couple of little things when I was writing it, but it was a little more localized, looking for stories and stuff. So this is exciting. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure, man. So, Jamie, tell us a little bit about your kind of journey getting involved, like getting into Canadian wrestling specifically. Was it something that you kind of grew up with, or was it something you kind of fell into later in life?
I kind of fell into it. I mean, I've been a wrestling fan since I was a kid, and I've just always loved it. And just more so in the last 10, 15 years, I've really kind of gotten interested in the history of wrestling itself. Not just in Canada, but the entire world, global history of it, and starting in sort of the Midwest area, and spiraling out everything else. So, I was writing for Last Word on Pro Sports, the wrestling department, and I was doing that for about 6 years, and then during the pandemic there, I was looking for an article. I knew that we had two WWE Hall of Famers from Windsor, Killer Kowalski and Abdullah the Butcher. So I was thinking about writing an article about what Windsor's given to pro wrestling history, because I knew about those two. And then I had George Crybaby Cannon and his Superstars of Wrestling show. And then we had Scott D'Amore from TNA, well, now Maple Leaf Pro. So I knew we had those things. So I thought, there you go. I've got a cool little article of some stuff Windsor had. So I was researching the article and kind of got a bit more, and then realized, oh, I could do a few articles. And then I kind of realized that, well, nobody's really going to want, a 5 or 6 or 8 series articles on Windsor, Ontario. So it kind of just morphed into a book. And it just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger, because I kept finding more and more stories and more interesting things. Because for those who don't know, Windsor, Ontario in Canada, we're directly across the river from Detroit, Michigan.
Yeah.
So we're essentially the same. We're like the sister city. We're like right. Our city is separated by a river. So
you could literally just drive like over a bridge,
yeah,
like through the border on into Windsor, right?
Absolutely. I live close to downtown, and I can make it across to Detroit in about 20 minutes. So it's
it's
very close.
I did some good gambling in Windsor back in the day.
Oh, yeah,
I bet. So like when you one of my favorite things about writing and really digging into stuff is researching. And
absolutely.
What are some of the things that really surprised you that you uncovered that you didn't see coming when you were putting this together? Like, what was something that kind of, I didn't see that happening? Like, talk a little bit about that.
There were some cool things. One of the cool things was, because I've been a big fan of Chief Don Eagle, the Indigenous star. Everything I'd read up until researching the book had him starting off in Montreal, the Montreal territory. Which is perfectly reasonable, because he's from the Kananaqua reservation just outside Montreal. So it's a pretty reasonable assumption that he started in Montreal, because that's roughly where he lived. But what I discovered was I have him doing a 6-month stint in Windsor and Detroit for about 6 months before his Montreal debut. So I've managed to figure out that he started wrestling almost a year earlier. And it looks like he came through because his dad lived in Cleveland. So because they were Mohawk, they could travel through the cross the border at the time.
Oh, okay.
Their passports would let them cross the border without being stopped because it's all part of Mohawk territory. So he was constantly going back and forth between Montreal and Cleveland, where he was the gold gloves boxer. But his dad was a wrestler too, Joseph War Eagle. He's actually the guy who brought the Indian Deathlock to wrestling.
Oh, okay.
Which is now essentially the figure four leg lock.
Yeah.
So he trained him and stuff, but he got sent up to Detroit to further his training. So he did a 6-month stint here. So that was really cool to kind of see this guy starting out and getting some big marquee matches at the time. Just pushing this young kid and how they're really pushing it. It would almost be like sort of like Cody Rhodes, you know, like in his first week. And they're talking about his dad, like, you know, you guys might remember War Eagle, you know. And so it was kind of cool to sort of little snippets of history and get a bit more stories that people haven't really seen or heard. And I think one of the biggest things was discovering how much Windsor was the essentially the farms league for Detroit. So I've kind of joked that the book is almost like it's like Batman's biography, but written by Robin. Because Windsor, we're still close to Detroit. We were a separate entity, but we kind of grew up very parallel to Detroit wrestling history. So you're going to get a lot of Detroit history intermixed with it, because for a good 20, 30 years, it was a lot of the training was done over here. They would come over here, train the wrestlers, and then they would do like almost like a 6 month to 2 year stint in Windsor to get their ring time. They had weekly wrestling in Windsor. So you'll see a lot of guys like the Sheik, for example, or Brute Bernard, you know, George Cannon for a while there, but George the Animal Steel, all the way up to George the Animal Steel, would wrestle in Windsor for 6 months to a year before they kind of got, okay, now we'll put them through the territory. Now we'll
right,
put them
right.
Through.
So it's like, it's kind of like the NXT to the
main yeah, market. Yeah,
Windsor,
exactly.
Windsor
yeah,
was
yeah.
like the sub territory. So did the Sheik, was he the promoter of the Windsor territory, or was he just promoting Detroit? But he was kind of like friendly relationship with the Windsor territory.
He was starting, so when they were kind of working together, it was Bert Ruby, and then Harry Light, who was the Detroit promoter that was one of the co-founders of the NWA. So he was booking it, and they trained the Sheik. The Sheik kind of, in 64, when he took over big time wrestling, they were filming their shows over here in Windsor.
Oh.
So they, our local TV station, it was cheaper to film over here. And and it was just an easier, they got a bigger market at the time. The Canadian net thing was broadcasting because it was shooting down.
Oh, so
it
was
got a bit more of a,
so Detroit wrestling had like a bigger market share in Canada because they were shooting in Windsor.
Well, because they would shoot it in Windsor, but because of the way that the antennas were turned,
gotcha.
You could get it as far as, you know, in parts of Ohio and stuff. So he had quite a radius.
Let me explain to the under 30 crowd in our audience, of which there are many. So back in the day, before the internet and before cable, you had to hook up an antenna to your house that would actually get the waves from up in the sky, and that's how you were able to get your
back
television.
In the old days.
Depending on the size of the antenna or the angle of the antenna, you could actually catch television signals from different markets.
Absolutely. Yes. And that was one of the great things about being it's funny, it's Midwest US, but we're considered Eastern Canada, so it kind of screws me up sometimes, but we're essentially in the Midwest, and it's like we in a perfect day. Some of the guys I interviewed in the book would say that in Windsor, you could almost get about five different promotions, you know, in the span of 2 days, because you could pick up some of the AWA stuff from Minnesota. You could pick up, you know, you could pick up WWA from Indiana. You could pick up NWA from Mid-Atlantic, and you could pick up WWF from Buffalo. So it was kind of, you got this smorgasbord of, oh, what wrestling do I want to watch this week?
Yeah. Which one was the predominant promotion in your area? I mean, obviously besides Big Time, but I would say it's probably AWA, right? Or was it?
It would probably would have. WWA was pretty big for a while. They actually warred for about three, four years in the early 70s there, when Dick the Bruiser decided to come back and reclaim Detroit, because he had been the number one guy in Detroit from 59 to 64. And then when he left to start WWA, that's when the Sheik bought in and bought Big Time and then pushed himself. So he kind of took over. But Detroit was Dick the Bruiser's town for the first half of the 60s. So then they went to war for Detroit in the early 70s there, and that was crazy. So WWA, they definitely got a lot as well. When the Sheik took over Big Time Wrestling, he kind of forced out Bert Ruby, who had been... So Bert Ruby had his own promotion, Motor City Wrestling, as well. So there was a smaller independent, probably like the TNA to the Sheik's WWE.
Right. So they have a rich history, and it seems like to me that Windsor's kind of like a hidden gem of a wrestling town, because I think when people think of Canadian wrestling, naturally we always go to Calgary, of course, we think of Montreal. And we think of Toronto, but then here you got this, I wouldn't say Windsor's a small town, but it's, you know, not one of the more famous towns in Canada, but it seems like they had a pretty good territory there.
Yeah, exactly. And I think my big hope from this is that it inspires a lot of other smaller towns or smaller cities to look into their history, because we were very much almost like a caboose. You know, like it was like we were an essential part of the Detroit's history, and had our own unique history as well. But I hope that other people look into it and kind of tell the stories of some of these smaller towns, because there's so many guys came from these towns, and you start to see a pattern or a certain characteristic. And a lot of the people from Windsor, they were fighters. I mean, Windsor is a blue-collar town. I mean, we're the automotive capital of Canada, so we're essentially like a mini Detroit.
Yeah.
So we were all, you know, very union town, a lot of factories. So everyone fights and claws for every inch they can get in this city. And you start to see, because I do profiles for every era. There's profiles in all the various wrestlers that came from this area, and you see that a lot of them had these stories of where they kind of fought and clawed their way into the history books, because they were making it one way or another. And it's very indicative of this era. And you've noticed that a lot of hardcore came out of Detroit and Windsor. But even going back, like Bull Curry.
Oh yeah.
I mean, he was from Connecticut, but he did most of his his training here in Detroit, and Detroit was pretty much his second wrestling home, if not his first. And but then you had another guy, Nanjo Singh, who was an East Indian wrestler who was also very violent, and him and Bull Curry had some very bloody, vicious battles. This is the 1930s. Wow. They were using chair shots and drawn blood, and Detroit was ostracized for having these. There's a guy, Ivan Kamakov, Russian. He was part of the Kamakov tag team in the AWA in the 50s and 60s. But in the 30s and 40s, when he first started out, he was using a coat hanger. He would, the triangle part, he would bend it. He would put it around the guy's head and try and strangle him. And then if that didn't work, he would use the hook and start gouging him in the face.
Oh, my gosh.
This is the 1940s. So Detroit had this heart, and then of course, so there's no doubt by the time, you know, the 50s came and the Sheik, he'd grown up on all these guys being these savage brutes, and he was like, got to keep the tradition going. And then of course, Abdul the Butcher from Windsor, Killer Kowalski from Windsor, both in that same era, also very tough, hard as nails, bust people open. So there's something in the water in this area, the Detroit River. All of Windsor and Detroit's wrestlers came out pretty hard nosed, and so that's pretty. It's a pretty fun ride.
Yeah, did they do some pretty big houses in Windsor? Like, did they sell a lot of tickets there?
Our biggest venue was the Windsor Arena. That was kind of our Madison Square Gardens. I'd say on average it held about 8,000. It was bigger actually in the 1930s than it was later on, because it was repurposed to be the home for the Detroit Red Wings for the first two seasons. While they were building the Olympia, the Red Wings didn't have an NHL-sized arena. This is in 28, 29. So they expanded the Windsor Arena to hold about 9,000-10,000. It's since backed down to about 5,000 when it became like an OHL team. But so they got some pretty big ones then. The biggest one they got was 12,000 for Jim Londos in 1930. Back when Jim Londos was probably the pound for pound, the highest drawing wrestler.
He's still the highest drawing wrestler of all time, right? I mean,
absolutely. I mean, I think so. I think when you factor everything in, that he's the number one draw for sure.
Especially adjusted for inflation. I mean,
it's
insane.
Yeah, crazy reading some of the numbers, but yeah, he got 12,000, and that's still the local record here. But I was doing the math, and so I think it was 9,700 was the capacity for the NHL games at that point. So you figure there's probably another 1,000 on the ice, another 1,000 standing room. That was a pretty packed arena.
That's awesome. And you know, they had a really good territory there, lasted for a long time, and then Scott D'Amore brought it back. When did he bring back Border City Wrestling? Was that like in the mid 90s?
Border City started in 94, and it's a very interesting passing of the baton. He took directly from George Crybaby Cannon from Superstars of Wrestling. Cannon died in 94, and Border City Wrestling started in 93. So George Cannon actually threw his last card ever about a month after Border City Wrestling started, and then George passed away from cancer on Canada Day in 94. And so he's for 30. They just had their 30th anniversary. So mm-hmm. he was doing that. And he was working for WCW when he was a teenager. He was booking the enhancement talents.
Yeah. Before I bring this up, I do want to get to the chat because we have a big fan of yours in the chat tonight. Scott Edwards, a.k.a. Scott E. Wrestling.
Oh, yes.
Our good buddy.
Friend of the show, co-host several times. He said, mm-hmm. love seeing Jamie on the show. Reason why I'm where I'm at. Congrats on the book, my friend. So that's a... The hardest working man in podcasting, Scotty.
Absolutely.
Wrestling.
He is. And
then we got... I don't know if you knew this, but there is actually a King of Canada, apparently. His name is King of the North. And he says, I grew up in Brockville, Ontario. My uncle used to tell stories about wrestling coming to the old Memorial Center.
Not quite sure where Brockville is. I think it's up a little more north than where I am.
Probably not where a king is from, I'm thinking. I think that his king stuff might not be true. He might not actually be the king of the north. Get the feeling that's a gimmick. I don't know. Could be wrong about that.
There's a lot of different tribes up there.
I don't know if you and Scott D'Amore planned this. I get the feeling you know each other. It's not like Windsor's a huge city. I get the feeling you've met.
Did you guys
plan the release of this book at the same time that he's bringing back Maple Leaf Pro Wrestling, the large, I guess Tony ran it back in the day and he purchased all the rights and now it's going to be a Windsor promotion. Did you guys plan this out? What happened?
No.
Kismet.
I mean, there was actually a lot of crazy things that happened. From when I started writing it, like Slammiversary coming to Windsor, I had no idea that was coming. And that kind of is the end of, it's sort of the book end of the book is, you know, is it Windsor coming full circle back around? So I wasn't planned either, but no, I will say that I've started research on my second book, and it's on the history of Maple Leaf wrestling. And but that is because of him announcing that. But this one, no, it was purely I got kind of wind of it as the book was winding down, but so I was like, shoot, like I couldn't put anything in the book because nothing had been released yet. So,
right.
But it was, there was a smile on my face that it was, I'm kind of, you know, it helps. I mean, ultimately it's to get the story heard because a lot of these people that I interviewed for the book, I mean, there was a lot of legends. Like I interviewed one of Paul Butcher Vachon's last interviews, Gino Brito. Like there's a lot of guys from the 70s and 60s and 50s that I interviewed. But a lot of them weren't anywhere near as big as some of these other guys. So, you know, guys like Dynamite Johnny Gates and, you know, these guys who are local legends or legends in this territory but didn't go outside, mainly because they were family men that just didn't want to go further than 4 hours away. So it was like, but getting their stories out, the amount of thanks I got from family members for telling the story of their grandpa or their, you know, other, you know, their mom's uncle or whoever, because these stories were just fading away in their own family. And, you know, this is a testament that they can now say, hey, you know, this guy did something in my family. Now his story's told. So that was the most rewarding thing. And again, that's why I'm really hoping that other people kind of get pick up the mantle and kind of go, yeah, I can tell a story about my town here in Kentucky or my town in Alberta or my town in Maine or wherever. Because I guarantee you that there's dozens of towns and cities in every single state and province that has stories very much like ours.
Yeah. JD's there in Chicago, and I think there could be a good Chicago book, right, JD?
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you.
Chicago's got a great history.
I mean, it does. Man. It's a bucket list thing of mine that I've just, that, you know, I got to get around to it at some point.
Yeah. I mean, at one point, the wrestling world kind of revolved around it because of the wrestling TV.
Absolutely.
Wrestling at the Marigold.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Old
Dumont Network. Yeah,
the whole Dumont Network.
It's interesting. You talked about Windsor being a little sister city to Detroit. You know, we in Chicago kind of had the same thing around the same time period in the 60s and 70s because Chicago was kind of carved up between, you know, Dick the Bruiser and Vern Gagne.
Yeah.
So, like, my dad, talking to my dad about pro wrestling, he always talks about, you know, Moose Cholak and, you know, Dick the Bruiser and Vern Gagne. But it was like, for a long time, Chicago didn't have its own identity. It was like, it is this weird little limbo. So it's interesting listening to Windsor, your stories about Windsor, and hearing how it actually was more functional working with Detroit than kind of what we had here. So that's pretty fascinating to me.
Well, Chicago was kind of, it was almost like, it's like, and I'm saying up until about the 60s, once it started getting carved up, like you said, it did. Chicago lost a lot of its luster,
for sure.
I mean, it's still, I think it was still always, it always remained a wrestling city, like a
top. Yeah.
But as a territory, it kind of collapsed in on itself.
Mm-hmm.
But man, when Fred Kohler was running it from like the 30s to the 60s, it was an empire, and it was, like I said, from the 50s to the 60s, it was probably the center with the Dumont Network. But that was the end. Chicago was always the end game of, they were almost like the mini trust.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was New York and Philly and all these kind of whatever, and Montreal and Boston. So there were, the Midwest had their own little trust of, you know, Ohio and Michigan and Indiana. And then they all kind of had their guys, and they would send them to Chicago. All their best would go to Chicago, kind of like the others all went to New York or went to Boston. So it was because you always read about the guys always wanted to make it to Chicago. So that was the that was the end game to get on Chicago TV.
Yeah, because if you got on Chicago TV, you were national. It's funny, you talked about Don Eagle before. I'd written a piece for our Patreon about how Don Eagle was the first major recipient of a screw job finish when he got hosed out of the world, out of his share of the world title. So I mean, these are such fascinating stories to hear that I don't think, because we have a younger audience. Mike and I are in our 40s. A lot of our audience is like, you know, late 20s, early 30s. So, I mean, like, we kind of get to wax philosophically on the history of stuff sometimes. So I love sitting and listening to you talk about, you know, what it was like, you know, the days of Al Haft and the Sheik and all this stuff.
It's
so cool to me.
Al Haft, the Ohio promoter, he was a big part. Yeah, I love all that stuff. And, you know, I'm trying to think what age I really got into the history. It was probably in my 30s. And it was just, you know, because I kept hearing people talk about Nature Boy Buddy Rogers or whatever. And sometimes it was just to find out, like, you know, initially from my memories, I mean, I actually, today's my birthday. I just turned 52 today.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Happy birthday. You shouldn't have led with that.
thanks for spending your birthday with us. We appreciate that.
Yeah.
This is the best birthday present. It's getting to talk wrestling with people. My wife won't do it with me.
I get that. So does Mike.
We do have a question from the chat. This is from Everything Pro Wrestling. He says, I have a question for Jamie. Does he know anything about some of the commissions? If they had any, did they have wrestling commissions in Canada in the provinces?
All the provinces have their own athletic commissions. There's actually quite a few stories about it. Canada was super behind the times when it came to letting women wrestle. It wasn't until the, now he's throwing me off. It wasn't until the early 70s when the Ontario Athletic Commission finally let women wrestle professionally. They outlawed women taking part in combat sports. So like no martial arts, no boxing, no amateur wrestling. So wrestling had to either admit it was work, which would have allowed the women to wrestle. But by doing that, it screwed themselves. So they just played along and were like, fuck, okay, so I get, sorry. So they were like, so they just didn't have, the women weren't allowed to wrestle. So, but late 60s, some of the people started to try and squeeze them in, and they would do them as exhibitions of like judo exhibitions, and there just couldn't be a winner. So they would essentially fight for 6 minutes. There'd be no winner, and then they would leave, and that would be their way of getting around it because, it wasn't an actual match. It was just an exhibition.
Yeah, it's like my 5-year-old soccer game.
1971. So, there was all these commissions, and they were just as screwy as the ones that you read about in the U.S. and all the silliness going on.
Yeah, I do. I want to share the book cover again. Again, you can get Jamie's book, Killers, Butchers, Crybabies, and Canadian Destroyers, The History of Professional Wrestling in Windsor, Ontario, Canada. You can actually get that book on Amazon right now, right, Jamie?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, I will make sure to link it in the comments below. So everybody go and support that. And if you buy it, send Jamie a note to tell Mike and JD sent you. That'd be cool. Or if you're Voices of Wrestling too, so tell them that the Voices of Wrestling sent you. That would be awesome. I did want to pick your brain, and I know we've kept you here for a long time, so we'll get out of here pretty soon. Right. It's really late where you're at. About just Maple Leaf Wrestling and Maple Leaf Pro Wrestling coming back to Windsor, being rejuvenated, revitalized, brought back by one Scott D'Amore. And it looks like it's going to be centrally located right there in Windsor. What does that do for your guys' wrestling scene? And Ken, what do you think about a territory like that coming back? Because I don't want to call it an indie, because it looks like it's going to be pretty well funded. They're bringing back more Ronaldo. They got some WWE stars there. They got some TNA stars that are going to be a part of it. AEW, New Japan's all going to be a part of this. It's well funded, so I don't want to call it an indie. I think it's going to be pretty well produced as well. So what do you think about a thriving territory system happening in Canada?
Well, I mean, I'm just going off what I saw in the Chris Van Vliet interview he did there this morning.
Yeah.
But it seems like it's almost going to be, I don't want to say NXT Canada because that's not quite the, But he wants to use it as a platform to help Canadian wrestlers get more exposure internationally and nationally.
Yeah.
Canada is a big country, but the problem is that all of our metropolitan centers are so far apart that you can't drive towns the way you can in the U.S. Like you can drive towns, bounce all across the U.S. and make your way around. In Canada, you could bounce around for maybe a day, but then you've got, you know, 3 days of absolutely nothing. So it becomes really expensive to fly. So you're almost more or less landlocked. That's why you see what you got: Western Canada, you've got Ontario and Quebec, and then you've got the Maritimes, the East Coast. It's all so separate because of the time zones and everything. So I think this is going to be a great opportunity for a lot of Canadian wrestlers to get a lot more exposure, because ever since 9/11, it's just been really tough for Canadians to get across the border to get that kind of networking.
Yeah. Yeah, well, JD and I are pretty excited about it because when we started out, it was a TNA podcast. Like, this was a TNA podcast. It was called Brace for Impact. And, you know, we followed Scott D'Amore's leadership there in Impact. And so now that he's no longer with TNA, we're kind of excited to see what he's going to do with Maple Leaf Pro Wrestling. And I just happen to be a fan of the idea of bringing back territory wrestling.
Absolutely.
And it, from his interview today, he kind of made it seem like it was going to be something uniquely Canadian, maybe even get on some type of Canadian streaming service. Yeah, I think you mentioned Crave.
Crave, do
something like that. And maybe run it kind of like what CMLL and AAA are doing down in Mexico, or what New Japan and Noah are doing in Japan. Like, do something like that, but in Canada. I think that's really cool.
Absolutely. I just noticed you're wearing a Joe Doering shirt.
Well, that's for you, sir. I figured you'd appreciate that. We have to be big Joe Doering supporters.
The book. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I love it. It just caught my eye now.
What's that?
It just caught my eye now. I was like, oh, it says Doering on his shirt.
Yeah.
Nice. I like it.
Yeah.
Big Joe Doering fans.
Yeah, we're big Joe Doering fans. We're big fans of pro wrestling history, so we really do want to thank you for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm coming on the podcast tonight. Everybody go and check out Jamie's book. It is, once again, I'll pull up the title. Like I said, it's my brain's too small. Killers, Butchers, Crybabies, and Canadian Destroyers: The History of Professional Wrestling in Windsor, Ontario, Canada, by Jamie Greer. Make sure everybody pick up a copy today and tell them that Mike and JD sent you. And also tell them happy birthday. And make sure you're following them on Twitter.
Yeah. Great. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Jamie. We will be hearing from you again here pretty soon. All right, everybody. That is going to do it for JD and I tonight. Be sure to check us out. I'll be back with Brace for Impact. I'll be doing my TNA review this weekend. And I'm going to be breaking down more of Scott D'Amore's interview with Chris Van Vliet this Saturday morning on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/TheMikeAndJDShow. But that is going to do it for us this week. And until next time, mahalo.
Competition's starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you watch your A game. A made no way from the track when we unite and spit. This isn't A game. Better bring your.
Do you like wrestling trivia? Then check out the 5-Star Match Game, the Pro Wrestling Quiz Show. I'm Joe Gagne, and every episode, I grill 3 contestants with 5 rounds of power-packed wrestling trivia. We have over 30 evergreen episodes in the archives covering WWE, AEW, Japan, Mexico, and much, 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 much more. Play along at home and check it out today.